In the Desert by Stephen Crane. In the desert, I saw a creature, naked, bestial, who, squatting upon the ground, held his heart in his hands and ate of it. I said, "Is it good, friend?" "It is bitter, bitter," he answered. "But I like it, because it is bitter, and because it is my heart."
A city where the sun is a mirror and the moon a shadow, where dancers cavort in forbidden operas, making love to forgetting and flame, where the wealthy play at war with silver swords and silken sashes, where the people mine the dead heart of a burning star for cannonballs and pipework, and where a thousand secrets hide in a forest of paper and ink. Here the five keybearers reside, the five who know the secrets of the broken gates of death. Five. Five only. There is no sixth spire, forlorn and forgotten in the desert. There is no one who looks to the displaced, the poor and destitute and landless, whose ancestry has been stripped from them by foreign looms and foreign sparkcraft, and no one has ever heard of the House of Endings. But this is their story. Their roots pulled up and burned, they stand in filth up to their necks, and that is precisely why they must keep their heads ever high. Welcome to Uduasha, immigrant. May it fear the name of the house you will build. Welcome to Desperate Attune, an actual play podcast about characters with their identities in peril, played by an international cast devoted to fiction-first gaming, collaborative world-building, and complex character drama. Welcome back to Desperate Attune, everyone, and a different sort of episode, because today we are exploring the world outside of Uduasha. At least that's the plan. As usual with role-playing games, one never really knows how this goes. We have a bit of a smaller crew today, as we have had in a couple of previous sessions, so with me today are Emma. Hello, Emma.
Heyo.
We also have Salty.
Hello.
And Adiat.
Hello.
Very normal and insane introductions today, guys. I like it. and so, yeah, last session ended on kind of a bombshell of Bidruhi being sent to prison to escape the, not the Red Sashes, the Falling Star. Bidruhi being sent to jail to escape the Falling Star Sword School. To sort of go in the kind of witness protection slash you're just actually in jail. And the rest of the crew having to deal with like a long stretch of downtime and a wait. And we played through that downtime. So I think everyone here had time to do some downtime activities.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We saw that through, who was it? Someone visiting Bidruhi in prison?
Yeah.
And telling him?
Yeah. And so on two of the characters' minds have been one and the same figure, Gurban the Camel, who is a people smuggler operating out of the desert. And so that is where we will focus today's episode. And the reason that you're focused on him is, one, he knows where Shahed, who is Mushfik's old ustad, is hidden because he smuggled him in. And he also has some sort of connection to the people of Rocca Village, who is the people with some sort of tie to the tree that Moss has found in an old construction site. And so we specified that you have both been investigating this matter and trying to find like more clues about what's going on with him. And I think
the way to tie Clem into this, I have thought about this, obviously that this guy has some sort of tie to your rival, Tamira. So I think what makes sense is here to start this this session and this episode with a pretty like smash cut to what we are doing, which is we are delving into the desert in search of this enigmatic camel man. But yeah, I think it makes sense to start with a scene with Clem about this. Clem, you have talked with a member of the Bone Shakers. You're the person responsible for the good relationship with this faction, the Gamblers. And I think the guy you talked to was called Flash. Is that
right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it will in fact be Flash who gets in touch with you, since like the whole crew have put out these feelers. I'll start with this scene, and then we'll get into like you guys can prepare and tell me what else you are doing and so on. But he wants to talk to you, and do you think you go to him, or do you think he comes to you? Like, do you think he summons you to his gambling den, or does he just show up? Like, what's the vibe here?
I feel like every time we've met, it's been on their turf, right? So
yeah.
Probably, and they're like tier two, yeah, they're probably summoning myself to them.
Yeah. So we see you enter Flash's office again. This, like, very perceptive gambling man. And he says, "Welcome. Have a seat. Have a seat. Listen, I'm going to cut right to the chase, if that's all right. You want a drink?"
I'm good for now, but thanks. What do you want?
Well, it seems we have common interests. Myself and you and your friends. You know a lot more about this man than I do, but there's a man with access to the desert. He knows routes in and out, ways which even the Falconers don't fully understand, and I certainly don't claim to. Guy called Gurban the Camel. Yeah?
I think Clem just raises an eyebrow. I was like, maybe we know something about him, but what do you want out of this? What's your angle then?
We have a problem with a guy owing us a debt. Guy owing not just us a debt, but other people. Pretty powerful people.
You want your cut, right?
We very much would like to, considering he's taken the money and fucked off into the desert with it. We know where he left from, but not where he went. Lost track of him around one of the northern gates. He like slides over a piece of paper, I think, where his people have compiled what they know. Just like some quick notes about where they lost the guy. And basically what they've done is like they've done some research into this person that owes the money that has slipped out through the north gate. And this person doesn't just owe them money, he also owes Tamira money. This is the this is sort of the connection to your rival, which means you might know the guy. He is Severosi, and his name is Joskin, and he used to work for Tamira in some capacity and has fucked off with quite a bit of money. You can tell me what else you know about him, if you think there's anything.
I think Joskin comes from south sort of Severos, kind of, where a lot of Dagger Island is settled there. I want to say, yeah. And I think, yeah, pretty comfortable living rough.
Yeah.
Maybe not in a desert, but sailing and such. Maybe trying to get towards the coast. I think that's where Clem would immediately go. He's got off towards the coast then.
See, I knew this friendship would be beneficial to us both. He says with a big, wide grin. And I figured the reason he knows that you are looking for this the camel guy is that both Moss and Mushfik have been asking around a lot, and you have friends and contacts within the Bone Shakers. They are kind of logical people to ask, given that they specialize in tracking down people, at least people who owe them money. And yeah, your goals align, it would seem. So he says, right, if you can track the guy down. Listen, we know we're not going to get back everything he owes us. It's a big, big sum. But the money he has with him, I figured a split. And he looks over at you with kind of looks you up and down, like figuring out how cheeky he can be. And then he realizes that you are going out into the desert. So he goes, 50-50. Which is about as cheeky as he can be when he's sending someone else into the desert.
Yeah, you know what? I'll even be generous. You can have Tamira's share. Right? That'd be fun. You know, in the spirit of this friendship.
Well. All right. Shake on it.
Yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Great. Great. We'll forward you the information we have, which admittedly isn't a lot, but it's a starting point. And listen, appreciate the help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No worries. Take care of yourself, I suppose. Well, don't. If I don't see you, that means the money's mine, right? Kind of laughs. Like...
Uh-huh. Yeah. He adjusts his collar a little bit and he says, oh, this, I mean... We do want the money back, but primarily this is about sending a message. People don't run away from us.
Of course not. It's all about reputation in the business, right?
Uh-huh. And he shoots you that look when you mentioned if I don't see you, just as a friendly reminder. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the scene. So jumping into it pretty quickly here, he has given you the papers of what his people know, where Joskin disappeared. And from what they can tell, it's not that Gerben was in town and smuggled him out. It's that he knew Gerben was in the desert somewhere. And he like set out on presumably a relatively short trek to join him outside the gates somewhere.
Yeah.
It must have been something they planned in advance, though, because no one just runs out in the desert without having someone waiting for them. So.
Yeah. So we can hunt down this guy then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Clem would, yeah, certainly tell Moss and Mishvik about this. We've got Bone Shakers want somebody. We've got a trail. Could probably follow him out there.
All right. Follow him out into the desert. Do they know how far he's got?
Not out into the desert, but out in apparently the North Goat. So.
But he's out in the desert now, no?
Yeah. Yeah. Won't be in the city.
Could be way deep into the desert, depending on how long ago they left.
Not long ago, right?
Yeah, I think part of the reason why the Bone Shakers think this will work is that the info is pretty fresh, right? They lost the guy, like, recently, and immediately went like, okay, who do we know that could know anything about this? And pretty much went straight to you. So he probably hasn't been out there for more than, like, 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2 days. I mean, Moss, you're the one with more experience, right? You'd know. You think this is something up your alley?
It really depends who is waiting for him out there. We can get there. We can follow his trail, I'm pretty sure. Although, maybe he's good at... I don't actually know how good he is at covering his tracks, but it's worth a try. The issue is 2 days. That's plenty of time to get somewhere out of sight, where somebody with like an automobile or some sort of vehicle could be waiting for you.
I think we see Mushri kind of deep in thought. He's scratching his chin, you know, he's like kind of nodding, and he goes, yeah. Look, there's no point in just going out there and just, you know, walking around trying to find them. No. The best way to find someone in the desert is from above. We should find Bahadur Badur.
If you're going to fly into the desert, I like it. The funny thing about this is we have established that Bahadur is hiding from the Bone Shakers because he owes them money too. So... you know.
I mean, I see no problem with this.
Yes. Yep. It's just finding him is a bit of work too.
So you're saying that we find somebody who's hiding from the Bone Shakers to find somebody who's hiding from the Bone Shakers, and also your guy Gerben. I mean, brilliant.
Uh-huh.
Lateral thinking.
Yes. I will say, though, in order to not, like, in order to not complicate this finding Bahadur, which might be a many-step process, I will offer you this option, right? You could find him who knows how the hang gliders and everything work, or you could ask the Bone Shakers for where his stuff is and just, you know, obtain the hang gliders with no instruction whatsoever and try to go at it that way, which would be a lot easier. They probably have confiscated some of his equipment already.
Yep, I'm voting for the latter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's also like in fiction, right? We'd spend some days potentially trying to find this guy.
Yeah.
And then just so we get instruction on his hang gliders, which might not be useful anymore because our quarry is gone by that time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Real far into the desert.
Yes. So I think you can totally acquire his hang gliders as assets from the Bone Shakers. I think when he went underground, he just like vacated his house, and he's not going to bring all of his sporting equipment when he's going into hiding. So you could probably just acquire an asset to borrow this stuff from the Bone Shakers. I think that's cool.
Unfortunate.
So are we handling it that way as an acquire asset role?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like the right way to do it.
Excellent. So I'm spending a crew coin here, and someone can... I've noted down a crew coin spent, and someone can roll tier to see how good shape the hang gliders are. I think that's the interesting uncertain here. Like, they're Bahadur Bahadur's hang gliders, so they're very good. But, I mean, the Bone Shakers broke into his house and took them by force, and maybe weren't that careful with them. So...
Oh, I can roll.
Yeah.
That was my idea. Let's see. Ooh, a 4.
A 4. So that means that they are tier 1 on par with you, which means not great. You can spend some coin on this if you want to have them like patched up and repaired real quick, or you can go with them as is. You have 2 crew coin. And I think I'll mention that like the amount of money that this guy Joskin ran away with is appropriately staggering. So I think he ran away with 8 coin all in all. Like, that's how much they think they can reasonably get out of this guy. But then, of course, it's this like split 50-50 deal, which means that you get 4 coin, unless you want to screw over the Bone Shakers and just keep all 8. That's up to you. But just to put into perspective the money, the economics of the situation. But you can spend some coin on the hang gliders if you want this to be, you know, safer.
I like the idea of it not being safe at all.
Okay.
I think also in
health and
in
safety doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in character, Mushfig would also just not care. Okay, or even... Yeah. Or, actually, in character, Mushfig wouldn't even, like, realize that they're in bad shape. They'd just be like, this is it, right? Like,
yeah. Okay, fair enough. So Bahadur's kind of ragged hang gliders that haven't had much maintenance with no instruction on how to use them. All right, it's tier 1. They can keep you flying, but yeah, that's about it. They can delay the time before you fall to the ground significantly. They may not be able to help you fall to the ground in any way safely, though. Uh-huh. Okay, so the crew is equipped with hang gliders. Lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to do any other prep, or is your plan just to jump off the wall and sail off into the north?
It would make sense to have water.
Yes.
Let's go and get some water.
Yeah, I mean, did prepare for going into the Deathland for some time.
I am currently, in the midst of... I think, shall I go and talk to my desert guide friend about this? Well, contact, not friends.
Yep.
Not really. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think I would like to invite Gosha to come to tea at the sword school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Settle down and
yes.
Be a nice bonding experience.
Yes. The last time we saw Gosha was during the Bidrahi's duel, where none of you saw her, but Gosha definitely saw you. So it's an interesting dynamic here. Yeah. So remind me, this is a fairly old person, right?
Mm. Yeah.
What else did we establish about Gosha? It's I think appears like as an old woman, is a desert guide and a sniper? Is that right?
Yeah. And damn good at it as well.
Yeah. So when she shows up at your place, obviously she does not carry like the big sniper rifle around. I think in the desert where you mostly see her, she has this very Mad Max wearing lots of rags and leather and patches and goggles look to her. But she shows up in her civilian outfit, which is like a surprisingly nice dress with some embroideries on it. Nice in this like grandma stylish way. But combines this obviously with goggles.
Of course. Very cool Sparkcraft goggles.
Yeah.
Defining.
And looks around, like surveys the area carefully, bites a chapped lip, and then knocks on the door frame, looks inside, and goes, "I'm here for Clementine." Then kind of surveys the room.
I like to imagine Clem's setting out teacups mm-hmm. very, very delicately. Mm-hmm. Mushvig, is this how you're the one who's always down the tundra? Is this how this is traditional, right? I want to make a good impression. She's very, very good at what she does.
So you are asking the wrong person. Mushvig is not actually from
yes.
Uduasha, and he just goes, yes.
Yes.
And I think she hears your voice, and also not being the best at like politeness, just stomps in her muddy hobnailed boots, which yes, this like nice grandma dress is also paired with like boots you could use to murder people. Mm-hmm. She just kind of stomps in and goes, "Clem!" And then awkwardly says boss. Nothing and stomps over towards the table.
Tea boss.
Sure. Yes, why not?
Sit down. Take some weight off of those knees. I'll serve you.
Yeah, she plops down with very little grace into a chair. Into the moldy sofa, obviously. And it creaks underneath her. And then she awaits tea, sniffs faintly, looks up at you. Goes, "You live here?"
Down road. Not here. Not half bad.
Yeah. No. No.
What are you up to these days? Or do you want me to get to the meat of the matter? Now, are you doing politeness?
Not much for it. Not much for tea either, usually. He says, and like smells the tea as if trying to decide whether or not it's been poisoned. That kind of vibe.
No, it's not poisoned.
Yeah, and we have an excellent tea vendor.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah, she like picks it up, tilts it towards her mouth, and then there's the very slow like slurping, like a very audible slurping as she drinks it. And yeah, just kind of looks at you the whole time.
But is she impressed by the tea? We do have a tea vendor at the thing. So uh-huh.
Yeah, a very good one.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. So, yeah, she slowly slurps it and just kind of waits for you to talk about why you invited her here. I get the feeling that Gosha does not talk much, you know.
We're heading out into the desert. to pick up a package, as you know, call it. I also wanted to see what your advice was. I've also got some other things that I want to know about the desert, wildlife, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Such a beautiful place.
Yes. So she slurps skeptically, and I think this is when you should make your consort roll. We'll see after she has taken her extremely long drink. Let's see how much she knows about this specific region of the desert. She is a desert guide, so obviously she knows a lot about it, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I filled up my Resolve XP last time, mm-hmm. which means I have a dot in consort.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what sort of position are we looking at, or are we just going fortune roll?
Yeah, I think it's fortune. You're not risking anything here. You know this person, like,
yeah,
reasonably well. She's not a close friend or anything, but
yeah,
let's see how it goes.
Yeah, and does infamous apply here for the 1+1D to gather info?
Oh yeah, that's a crew ability? No, is it a
claim?
Oh yeah. Yes, I think it does.
Wonderful.
Mostly because you have such good background intel, right, from the Bone Shakers. Mm. I think that's how we make sense of this.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Let's just do it with that 2 die. That's good. 6. Good
6. Ship. Yeah. Mm. So she slowly stops slurping, sets it down. She takes a moment to process that you're going into the desert. I think that's the thing she like, you know, takes her some time, and then she looks up and she says, "Well, there's that's the direction of the old glass bones. It's a haunting place. It gets very cold, and they're not really bones. There's some debris from when the star fell in the well. Look like bones, though. Makes the terrain very uneven.
Oh. Hmm.
A lot of obstacles. Difficult to see very far.
So would an aerial approach be wise, then, from above? If the terrain's difficult?
If you can get up on one of the things, he says, not realizing that you're intending to fly, clearly, because it's, but he goes, slippery, glass-like. But if you can get up on them, yeah, good vantage point, good place for... And then she looks around, because Moss isn't in the room, but I think she's just sensed Moss, like some sort of sixth sniper sense.
Moss was already kind of like, I think Moss was stewing on a question.
Mm-hmm.
She now kind of like detaches herself from the wall,
mm-hmm.
Where she had been leaning, and she says, "If it's so bad seeing, we won't see their shapes in the darkness of this person we're following. We'll have to rely on the light they're carrying. Is it a place where they would be carrying light? Maybe we'd have to incentivize them to somehow."
Yeah, I think she turns very slowly and looks over at you and kind of confirms that this is indeed the person. And because she is a paranoid sort of individual, I think visibly like her hackles rise and she starts to suspect this whole thing might be a trap. Like she trusts Clem, but how far can she trust Clem?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, she sets the teacup down daintily and she says, "Oh, they'd have to carry some sort of light. And tricky thing is, out there, I said the things are made of glass. The light gets all distorted. There's a lot of mirages and shadows and light bouncing around. But they would have to be carrying one. Be foolish not to."
Is there a way not to carry light?
Oh, you're asking her, like, for
I think she's asking, like,
uh-huh.
I think she's thinking, like, we know how to hide pretty well, but if we could carry no light and have them carry light, mm-hmm. and they would be carrying light,
yeah,
like, we'd have an advantage.
Yeah, she says, well, besides not being able to see, one other problem, the bats. Scared of the light they are.
Of course.
The bats.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more, please.
She coughs and says, well, not alive anymore. Used to live out there in the woods, what used to be there. Way back before everything. Pitiful things now. Specters. Shadows of whatever they were. Mighty big, though.
Specters as in ghosts.
Yes. Deathlands. Mm. He says, looking up at you. And, I think it's, you know, we established when we wrote the Uduasha setting that there are ghosts of plenty of things in the desert that never were human. And so these things might not even be bats, right? Mm. But they are ghosts of some winged thing. So.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And they fear the light.
I think Moss would actually smile a little bit at the mention of ghosts.
Would I be able to spend a coin here and do one last downtime activity to try and finish my Deathlands clock?
Absolutely.
Because I think this makes a lot of sense to continue consorting to get more information about this, because this will put us in a really good position, I think.
You want to tame a ghost bat? Is that your goal here?
I think that is an excellent idea. Uh-huh. And thank you for putting that in my head.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Uh-huh.
We're going to get revenge, get money, and get a ghost bat. Three tiers. This is going to be a great plan.
Yeah, you're good.
And these things are fucking massive, so we can all ride on them.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Ooh, yeah.
I see no issues with this.
Uh-huh. Well, let's see. okay, spend a coin. I guess you can consort again. You can take a bonus die from Gosha here, because she's a contact. I think you can apply it again. However, and I will flag this right now, the consequence of you having called upon Gosha, who is not a good friend, and having called her into a room with Moss, whom she already distrusts, is she is going to get very paranoid again and think that something is up, and note that down about her. Like, Gosha is paranoid, and if you call on her again, she may not be so quick to trust you this time.
Would I be able to? So that's by taking her.
That's by taking her assistance.
Yeah.
This is just sort of the cost, right? Because
I'll just have to work towards making her a friend, because I really like this character. I think she'd be fun to have in
absolutely
a bit more. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can do that. Mm. Okay, since we have established that you have a sister, the history, note down a 6 clock, I think, to make her your friend. And if you finish this, it won't just deal with this consequence. She will become your, like, close friend, marked in red on your sheet.
Of course. Let's see how it goes. Come on.
Yep.
Pull through, Grosha. didn't really.
Okay,
didn't
one
really
more tick.
Pull through.
One more tick towards your clock. And I think the reason for this is that she doesn't know very much about these, like, ghost bat things, because, like, the thing she knows about them is either blind them with a lamp or try to run. And people who fail at the former attempt the latter, and people who attempt the latter are not heard from again, generally. So.
Yeah, that's cool. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe you will still find some opportunity to finish this clock out in the desert.
Yeah.
Like, we'll see how it goes, but.
Sounds good.
You haven't finished it now, so you have no idea how to tame a Deathlands beast just yet.
We'll find out.
Maybe you will learn in the
future. Trial and error.
Yeah.
Trial and
I mean,
error.
Yes,
that's
you're already planning
works.
On flying by trial and error, so. Very good.
Let's do some science, guys.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, Gosha can provide you with some information, and I think you still have a follow-up question, technically, because you did roll a 6 on the first.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, go for it.
Sure, I can ask. So much for me just ask. Incidentally, do you know anything about the pattern of the desert thermals?
The pattern asking of the desert what?
The thermals, the air currents.
Oh yes, yeah. She, of course, she because I think it's cool. She does, and she says, north, updraft. Might help. Carries the bat things way high. And I think what we will learn here is that this is good for you in that it makes it easier to fly, but it might make it difficult to land without crashing. I think that's the direction we're taking this in.
Yeah, that's fair.
So yeah, it's like one of those places where the birds can soar really, really high with really little energy. And then to get down, they do that cool like falcon dive. And they know how to do that because they're birds. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You might not. Very good. So is that the scene? Is there more information to gather out of Kosha?
I think I'm happy with that.
So
I don't have anything more to ask.
Yeah, I think a side benefit of this is that you kind of figure that they've headed towards these glass structures because they're a good place to get lost, right? It makes a person hard to follow, but on the other hand, it means it's obvious roughly in what direction they probably went. And also there's bats. Now you know that.
Excellent.
There's also bats.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I think we've got everything we need.
Yeah, okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Then let's do the engagement roll. I love that this is it. Sure. Let me see. How does this work again? Where's my book? Hold, please. I just want to look up the questions so I have them. Well, the first question is this operation particularly bold or daring? Which I think is an automatic yes. I don't think there's any question about that. So that puts you at 2 dice because you start with 1 for sheer luck.
Yeah.
Is this operation overly contingent on many factors or complex? I don't think so. There's not a lot of complexity.
No.
You haven't really figured out what you're going to do once you spot them from the air, but, you know, separate problem. Does the plan's detail expose a vulnerability of the target or hit them where they're weakest? No, I don't think so. And is the target strong against this approach or have the particular defenses or special preparations? I would have said so in the sense that they know the desert, but I don't think they're prepared for the direction of up. Then again, they know about the bats, but
do they know about people?
No, I don't think so. So I think we're staying at 2 dice. Can friends or contacts provide aid or insight? Yes, they have. So that's a third. That's 3. Enemies or rivals interfering? No. Not really. So insanely, we're at 3 before we get to other elements. And I don't think tier is relevant here because Gurban is not like a particularly high tier character. But I will say the desert itself probably counts. So I think you will take -1 just for it being the Deathlands. But amazingly, that still puts you at 2 dice somehow.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well done.
So I guess someone can roll the engagement roll, and then we will see how this goes.
I will roll the engagement roll. 2 dice. Roll.
Oh. Yep. And a 6. Incredible.
This can't possibly go wrong.
No way.
Yeah. So, how we'll frame this then is you take Bahadur's hang gliders, and I mean, it's not a totally uncommon thing in Udvasha to use flying things. Because the city is so vertical, people do this sometimes. So, you know, maybe you have at least seen people use them before. It's not like it's a completely unknown thing to you. And they are designed for this kind of flight. And also you have the updrafts, which help very much. So basically, part of the reason why this works really well is you go out to the north, you find... Probably you leave, actually, from the spot that both Bidruhi and Clem found, the one up by Falcon's Perch, where you can surveil the city. I think this is like during a changing of the guards, like while the Fursan up above are not paying attention. You climb over the walls, you leap out, and you fly off into the night. And yeah, we will see you be picked up by the thermals and hurled into the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, this is, as modes of transportation go, it's a good one. And it goes amazingly smoothly. You fly in the right direction, you're roughly able to steer, you just have the wind with you. A lot of this is just sheer luck. And so, there are two things going on here. Are you carrying light with you as you do this? And on that note, what's everyone's load?
I'm going to go with normal, I guess. I mean, not we're not being discreet once we actually find them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say heavy would have impacts on hang gliding, though. So if anyone's on heavy, problems.
Normal, in that case.
Yeah, normal as well.
Okay, mm-hmm. Everyone's on normal. So no one is better or worse at hang gliding due to the weight. Lovely. So second question, is any one of you marking a lantern? Or are you doing this in the dark?
Since we haven't found a way to do it in the dark, like we don't all have night vision goggles or anything. I think we probably have lanterns. Also because we're flying and that's where the bats are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was about to say. Yeah. So you have, okay. You have lanterns. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, I think the first obstacle will be you fly on these thermal updrafts. You see the glass structures below you, and you will, in fact, see, like, from pretty far away, you will see the lights bounced about down in these glass structures. You will see them reflected in a couple of, like, things that look like obsidian fingers or bones or something like that, one could call them. Like, weird, slightly curved rocks, almost in the shape of a rib cage. And you see light reflected in those and, like, amplified for a moment. And are pretty sure that you've seen a sign of your quarry. And here's your first obstacle from a controlled position. How are you going to steer these things? Like, how are you going to escape this updraft that threatens to just carry you further and further into the desert?
I have no knowledge of hang gliding IRL, so...
Nope. But I think it makes sense that the first obstacle is trying to get it down somehow, so...
I'm just saying, I don't know enough about hang gliding in real life to know what my character should do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
presumably turn or something like that.
Yeah. Just wiggle about a bit.
Yes, find the off-ramp from the thermal, right? It's like a highway.
Yeah, exactly like a highway. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the very cool and cinematic thing to do would be to dive bomb this group.
Mm-hmm.
Or try and land on maybe some of the bones so we could follow them from up high.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So how I'm framing this is, because of the engagement roll, you're at controlled standard to land. If you want to do something cooler than to land, you will have to trade position for effect or push or something. Like, standard effect here just gets you a landing somewhere in the vicinity of your quarry. So you can trade position for effect. I also think this is a group action, so someone is presumably leading you. Someone who is, like, the most... Basically, whoever takes the initiative and go, let's land now. So I don't know who that is, but...
I'm wondering, can Mushfik use the grappling hook as like an anchor?
Oh, I guess he could. Just shoot down at one of the ribs. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Then I can lead the group action as well.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So are you trading position for effect or are you happy with standard?
So you said it was just risky standard?
Controlled standard, even, because you did get controlled with a 6.
Oh, yeah, then we're definitely trading position for effect.
Yeah, okay, so risky great. And in that case, great effect can be basically either going down quickly or going down with precision and landing on top of these things, like on top of the glass ribs. Which one do you want?
I think, it's a group action. What do we want? I would say speed.
Yes.
Yeah, speed's important.
Okay.
All right.
So no precision, just coming down hard and fast into the desert, hot on the heels of your quarry. Very good.
Yeah. All right. So I think I'll go finesse. I think makes the most sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What would I get for extreme effect?
Both speed and precision is the simple answer.
Because I could. There is more position to trade. Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah. You could go to desperate extreme, certainly. Yeah. And that would get you. Yeah.
You know what? Let's do it.
Okay. Yeah. I think the desperate extreme. Involves sweep, dive bombing like straight down towards one of the glass structures and attempting to like land on it, right? That would both get you close to your quarry and above them and being able to see them. Desperate risk here is mainly you're basically doing a controlled crash landing at that point. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe we have to extinguish some of our lanterns because, you know, we're juggling that going on.
Yeah.
Opening that up.
Okay, in fact, I will posit that as a devil's bargain. I think that's good enough to be separate. So if you accept, and I don't think it's putting them out on purpose, I think what happens here is that if you land this quickly, the lanterns will just go out by the wind, right? Like,
yeah, I'll take that.
Mm. I'm taking that. I have nothing in finesse. I need to take this.
I will let you each take this devil's bargain separately. That's not normally how group actions work, but it's a personal consequence. So whoever takes this devil's bargain does not have light when you land.
I could, okay, in that case, I'll just push myself for an extra die and then...
Okay, so Mushwick is pushing. Is Clem taking the devil's bargain?
Yes.
Is Moss taking the devil's bargain?
I am taking the devil's bargain.
Okay, so Mushwick will have a light, the rest of you will not. Okay, amazing.
All right, let's see it. Ooh, a 5. All right.
Mushwick.
1, 2, and 5.
A 2.
Clem rolls a 2, so that's 1 stress for Mushwick.
Oh!
And Moss rolls a crit.
Incredible.
Yes.
Wait, how do you have so many dice?
That was too many extra dice. It's the first 3 that count.
Oh, okay, it's the first 3 that count. It's still a 6.
One die, extra 3 total, not 3 extra dice.
Ah, I see.
So 6.
Mm-hmm. It's still a 6, so which means that you somehow pull this off. Mushwick takes a stress, and you sweep down with extreme speed, and I guess just kind of see what is going on here. So you're doing this stealthily, quickly, and with precision. So you're going to land on a weirdly shaped glass rock. It's like slippery. You're presumably landing together, because I'm thinking that's your goal. So like up above. And what you can see is a small camp of people down below. So you have not managed to intercept this person before reaching Gerben the Camel. But then again, reaching Gerben the Camel was kind of your goal. And you're pretty sure that that's him down below on account of him having Deathlands Camels. The Severosi have Deathlands Horses. This guy has Deathlands Camels, which are, screwed up and weird things with glowy eyes. And what you see is a small group of them being corralled towards some sort of overhang or cave or something like that. One of these meteorite fragments, which you now realize what they are. They're old bits of fallen star. One of them has a gaping mouth in it that seems to lead to some sort of cave or hole or something like that. And this crew of people is headed in that direction and pretty quickly. Gerben has a sizable crew with him. So, there's at least a dozen, maybe 2 people in his entourage. And at this distance, even though you're very close to them, you're above them, you can't easily see which one is Joskin, because obviously they wear desert clothes, right? Mm. They've wrapped themselves up against the sand and whatnot, and against the cold, because Uduash is in the desert, but away from the star, there's no heat source. So this is not a scorchingly hot Sahara desert. This is a cold, rocky Gobi desert in this area. So everyone's very bundled up and they're difficult to identify. However, you have managed to overcome this first obstacle pretty much flawlessly, just dive bombing down. The people who did take the devil's bargain, though, even as you land, you can feel and hear that you have caught something in the draft after you, and you are being followed by things from the sky.
How good are we at shooting things? Because I think, as we clutch down, I think Clem looks at the odds and goes, we could destroy their lights. They're a much juicier target down there than we are up here.
Absolutely true. Though, we also need these people.
They won't carry them all off.
What if they carry the one we need off first?
That's a 1 in 6 chance.
Mushfik is the person who still has a light and is...
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Mushfik goes one thing at a time, guys. Let's actually... Let's find who we're looking for. Because, I mean, the things aren't here yet. The bats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I think we'll try to get closer. So it's by, like, scurrying between the obsidian fingers.
Okay, so basically trying to move, like, on top of them.
Yeah.
I can see it. Sure. So, I think, yeah, it sounds like an action. It's probably a prowl or a survey to, like, your goal is to get information, so it could be a survey as well.
How many people did we say there were total?
So, between 1 and 2 dozen. So, you know, 12 to 24 people-ish somewhere. Mm. I think it's hard to count them exactly, too, just because, you know, people move about, everyone is dressed the same. It's hard to say whether you've counted someone twice.
So, I mean, we don't know what Gurban the camel looks like, but he's presumably the leader of this.
Oh, yeah.
Troop, yeah. So, I guess we're I'm surveying, looking for someone who looks like the leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. So
unless
I think
someone else wants to do it, who is better at surveying than I am? Maybe?
I have two.
Yeah.
So here's how this is going to go. Mushfik, you have a light, so your position is risky. Mm-hmm. Anyone else who tries to do it is in a desperate position because they don't.
Sure, in that case, I'll take a... What are we doing for a position? Risky or?
Yeah, risky standard.
Or risky standard. Can I get an assist then?
Yeah.
Will.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right.
I'll take stress.
Oh, it's a 4 and a 3, so.
Okay. Just give me a second. I realize I forgot to set up a clock that I should be setting up, which is from the initial thing of moving about without a light. So here is a clock called Bats Ah. This clock does not tick for Mushfik because, again, he has a light. What instead happens, unless you want to resist it, is that you will spot the leader, and the leader's guide will spot you, because you have a light. So, he won't necessarily, or like, the guide won't necessarily act foolishly or rationally or understand what's going on, but, I'll give you the information first, then you can decide whether or not to resist the consequence. What happens here is that Gurban is a... like haggard, lean man covered up in quite a lot of cloth, like heavy, thick gloves and so on. But you recognize him primarily because he has a long cloak or cape held against him, which is much more expensive than the others. It's not like fancy silk or anything like that. It's utilitarian expensive, right? He has high quality clothes and leathers. And he also has the prize camel, which is leading personally. And so you have identified Gurban. He's dressed much the same as the others, and from afar you can't tell much of his face, but you can tell it's him. And the person who is with him is a guide who looks very experienced. Like, this is someone who has trekked through the desert many times, and in fact probably someone who looks a lot like Moss in, like, clothing and demeanor. And this person is going to turn up, see you, and unless you resist it, point out to Gurban that there is a light up above.
I'll resist it, because... Mm-hmm.
Move the lantern quickly as you see this person raise their head or something.
Yeah. So, I think I'm just reacting faster than they are, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so prowess probably could be insight too, but let's see. It's a six.
It's a six.
Yeah, quick reflexes. So you roll away, hide, still have the light with you, but roll away behind a rock or something. They look up and have a probably just the wind moment. Like, thought I heard something. Guess I didn't. And Gurban, for his part, seems to be corralling people and camels into this overhang or cave or whatever it is ahead of himself. He is staying behind, probably because he has enough experience traveling that he can tell that something is up. So this may be both good or bad, but you have a clear view of where he is as he is doing the form an orderly line, waving for people where they're supposed to go.
Right, and Mushvik does the thing, when you're being quiet, the hand gestures, there's two of them that way. Mm-hmm. To the rest. Mm-hmm.
I think Moss will kind of creep up next to Mushvik. You see which one it is?
Yeah, right there. With the big scary looking camel next to that haggard looking guy.
All right, I'm going to stand in line.
In line?
Yeah.
In line?
Yeah. This is what most do.
This is like there is a crowd. She needs to be in it.
What are they queuing for? I have to go there too.
So.
I think Mushroom is on a misunderstanding and go, why? Do you think they've got something good in there?
I think we can get in with. We can get in with him.
Mm-hmm.
If we keep watch and get in after. Mm. We'll have at least one person in the crowd whenever you act.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, Moss, it sounds like you need to slide or climb down. I think you can glide. I did say these were pretty slippery, so I think it's possible to just gracefully do a cool slide down.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tick the clock of bats because you're moving around in the dark.
Okay.
But so that just happens. But you can take this action. And I think it's a risky standard. I don't think it's super desperate to just try to blend into the crowd. And it sounds like something you can do. So.
All right. Cool. It seems to me like it's kind of a finesse. Mm-hmm. Both for sliding down and moving into that crowd. So she just kind of lands behind one of the glass bones. And then when nobody's looking, I think she'll just try to silently join the line in the back when nobody will really notice. That's a finesse. It's two dice.
Mm-hmm.
Is there another devil's bargain here?
Okay. Yes, there is a devil's bargain. And it's a kind of interesting one. I think you can take the devil's bargain of sharing, this guide I mentioned is a person who looks a lot like you and is a person who has your sort of role as a walker, as a person who's used to the Deathlands. I think you can, if you want to, call on your camaraderie with that person and have them realize you're here. Now, if you take this devil's bargain, they won't immediately raise the alarm because there is this shared camaraderie spirit, right? It'll be like a nod at each other, but they will know that something is up.
Yeah, maybe Moss actually just maybe they make eye contact for a second and Moss raises a finger to across her lips and she stomps in the sands a few times, making Morse code for it's fine. The Deathlands code we established a while ago.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking that this is a person who lives by the Deathlands code and who is not about to stir shit up out here. But they will know. And you can have a devil's bargain for that.
I'm taking that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crit with that.
It's a crit. Okay. I know what your crit bonus is, unless you have something else in mind, and it's tied to your devil's bargain.
Awesome.
This guide, as you look into their eyes, you realize probably just from maybe just facial features, maybe some talisman or something they wear. This is a Kethrisi person.
Oh, nice. Is it bird bones? Or do we have did we already establish a name for them?
Which ones? The...
Did we establish who the guide is? Did we establish
no.
a name for them?
So lovely. Yes, it could be Bird Bones indeed. A Khetri bounty hunter. Fantastic.
All right.
Why not? That's a fitting enough crit bonus, so you know this person personally. Tell me about Bird Bones.
Yeah, so Bird Bones. Similar looking person, indeed, with their kind of Deathlands garb, and bundled up, very difficult to see. They will probably have like a few bits of some sort of like chitinous armor here and there.
Yeah.
I wonder, so the Bird Bones is short for Breaker of Bird Bones with a Marble Hammer. And I think maybe they'll actually have the Marble Hammer here.
Yeah, so that's how you identify them then.
Yeah, and it's I think their name, they got their name in sort of a... There was an actual bird they killed, but the bird was a person. So there's like this grim myth about them.
Mm. Fantastic. So yeah, Birdbone sees you, is surprised for a moment, but I guess also recognizes you and goes like, okay, well, get in the cave. Fucked up out here. And so they will. So they will let you pass. And you, I guess the rest of you just see, you don't even see Moss, because Moss is good at this. You just see a group of people enter this like shallow cave. And what about Clem and Mushvik up above? What do you do?
Just saying, if we extinguish the lights,
I mean,
we've got the advantage.
It would cause a distraction. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm. Just saying. But
any ideas?
You want Gurban, right? You want to talk to him, or do you just want him dead? Which you prefer?
I mean, he can't tell me where. Will the Shahid is if he's dead? Can he?
No, you're right.
No. No.
Out here he technically can because there are ghosts, but you may not want to take that risk.
No, I wasn't being snarky. That was a genuine question.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's Plan B.
Yep. That's Plan B. All right.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we're better off talking to him?
I feel like if we went down and we said hi. He would probably try to kill us.
It's not exactly a good look.
No. No, let's do the best thing. Our plan is to cause some chaos and...
Yep. Yeah, so I think Gurban would be one of the people carrying a light. I think it makes sense. He's the leader of the group. He would, you know, not everyone is carrying a lantern. They have a little group. But he's carrying one of them. And this is also the one at the moment, like, outside of the cave.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We so panic. We come down, we save them dramatically. Just like in the play, we save them dramatically, pounce out from the tree.
Uh-huh.
Then they'll trust us for sure.
Exactly. Clem and Mushvik are bad influences on each other.
Yes, I was about to say. Okay, go for it. It's some sort of action.
Yeah.
What exactly are we
wreck?
Doing?
Wreck? Creating distractions and chaos. Carefully applied sabotage.
Uh-huh. I think.
I guess the question is. I guess my question is, what exactly are we doing to put this light up? So we're above. I mean, is this some? We did say we brought some water with us. Am I just chucking a water bottle at this guy's torch?
Yeah, I think Clem was suggesting shooting, but yeah, you could, I guess, just precision throw water at it. It's possible.
So what would Clem be shooting? We don't have guns.
Yeah. I have a gun.
Oh yeah.
Clem's pistol.
Right.
Clem has a gun.
Oh, yeah. Oh yes. Oh, sure, if you want to take a shot, you can do that.
Yeah. Something if a gun's introduced in the first act, it must go off in the second,
uh-huh.
right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, well, I've got
okay. So I think Clem is a good enough shot that this is a standard effect. It can work. You can shoot and break the lantern. It's possible. Mm. I do, however, think it's desperate. And the reason it's desperate is that you are putting out a light while causing a tremendous amount of noise.
Yeah.
And these things are, they may not be bats, but they don't navigate based on sight, so they probably are drawn to sound.
I like it. No, this is good, because we want the bats to show up.
Yeah.
How's it?
I know. It's just, you know, the possible desperate consequence is that they become as much of a problem for you as they do for Gerben.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, I think we've established that we want to create as much trouble for ourselves as possible, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, the thing is, I can trade for position if I use, say, throwing knives instead, because I also have throwing knives.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be risky standard, right? Rather than desperate, because I'm not making that noise. Would it be a little bit
different? I think you're trading down in that case. It feels like it's risky limited, because it's also harder to accomplish this with a with a knife, right? So I think with the limited effect, like if you go for a throwing knife, you can get risky limited, which basically means knocking the lantern over or knocking it out of his hand. Like he will drop it, but it won't instantly shatter the way it would if a bullet hit it, because it's a pretty rugged lantern.
Fuck it, I'll go for the desperate standard, I think. Pistol. Mm-hmm. Pistol it. Fuck it. Yeah.
Good.
Let's go. I am going to also push myself for effect here, though.
Mm-hmm. And okay.
To go for desperate great. And I think great effect is... It would be aiming in such a way that the sound doesn't come from anywhere in particular. Like, it just sounds... Sure. Like, it's not going to point us out. Like if we come running up, it'd be like, we've just been shooting at bats.
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. Cool. That's a fitting great effect. You were able to not only break the lantern, but do it not exactly stealthily, but without him knowing what happened. Yep.
Yeah. Cool. I'd say the architecture around here would lend itself to that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, exactly. That's what I was thinking. Yep. Is there an assist here?
Yeah, I can assist. I'm right there. I don't know. Fantastic. Just help you just help you line up the shot. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a little squeegee bag of water.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's go.
Very good.
It's a six. It's not too bad. Yes. Six. Nice.
Okay. So, I will still mark, because you're taking an action while in the dark, I will still tick the bat's clock once, but it doesn't fill. And what this means in this situation is, so, you know, you have drawn some of the attention of the bat. And what has happened here is that Gerben is absolutely realizing that they will dive down on you all in a moment. You got great effect, so I guess it's up to you. Do you want them to attack right this moment, or do you want him to have some time to get his wits together? I'll actually let you decide how it plays out.
I would like him to have a very short amount of time to get his wits together.
Yeah.
Like, immediate action, not thinking fully. But not immediately beset. Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a bang. There is this, like, the lantern goes out for unclear reasons. He reacts to, like, the bang more than that. He, like, realizes half a second too late about the lantern. And I think what he will do is he will turn towards the cave and shout something into the cave. I think that's the logical reaction he would do. And I guess we learn a thing about Gerben here is that he's brave enough to defend his own people, like, first. He doesn't run into the cave. He calls ahead to his people to do something. And I think it's a perfect opportunity to cut to Moss then, since there is this few moments of reaction. So Moss, what this turns out to be is like an outcropping in this meteor. It's not, you know, it's a cave, but not the one that goes like deep into the bowels of the earth. It's kind of a cave where if you have a lantern, you can see the back end of it. And at this shot, and as this command, one of Gerben's people, probably not the guide, like rushes forward into what's very clearly a campsite used regularly. They have camped out here before, so have probably other smugglers. It's like a convenient smuggler's cove for people brave and crazy enough to venture out into the Deathlands. But there is another reason why this is a safe place. And it is that at the center, like buried very, very far back into this, is something that this guy now digs up. And it is a very, very small ember of fire. A very, like, tiny piece of the star in the well.
Oh.
here close the doors to the House of Endings. Those who dwell within are Soheb, called Cloak, Adiat, called Soap, Saumitri, called Tree, Salty, and Emma. I have been Prince, your host. Our City of Uduasha is based on Blades in the Dark by John Harper and Evil Hat Productions, with special thanks to Johnstone Metzger. Follow us on Twitter or support us on ko-fi.com/desperateattune. If you want to engage further with us, we also have a Patreon at patreon.com/desperateattune, where you will get our newsletter, extra content, and updates from Uduasha.
On the next episode of Desperate Attune.
They take out some part of a Ketrisi tree. We have seen Mushfik use the bananas before as a powerful ancestral thing. I think this person is using sap.